Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Now,
good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Oh, what a week it's been. We have had so many different things that challenged us. But this evening, I have such a phenomenal guest that's just going to calm all my nerves and really going to put all of my frets to rest, I believe, because he is just so wonderful. I've not known him for a very long time, but he has that effect on me. But before we get to my wonderful guest, and I thank you very much, those of you who are already calling in, and the list is coming on the board. I hope you'll have some questions for us later on. I want to do a little housekeeping, the same kind of housekeeping that I do every week, but it's for those of you who are listening for the first time, and this is blocktalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. If you want to call in, like those people who are called in already, the list is growing on my board here, you call 516-063. And if you want to be on the air and ask a question or say hello, you press the number 1 after a while. We have been having a great time. In another month, I will be celebrating a year of doing these radio programs, the podcasts, as they call them. And I've had the time of my life. As I have every week that we've been doing it, I want to introduce you to a wonderful person that has come into my life. I have to give credit to my wonderful friend, Melba Tolliver, who one day said to me, I think that you would like to be interested in a round that is being conducted at Lehigh University by a phenomenal person, and it involves the arts, education, and leadership. And I thought, okay, well, is it a Zoom? And I'm on Zoom all the time. I think what I'll do is just I'll get up and I'll keep my pajamas on, and I'll show Melba that I'm on for 5 minutes, and then I'll just get off. Well, I went, and what happened? I started to talk my head off. I stayed off camera because I looked terrible, but I had the best time, and it was led by a gentleman named John Drescher, who is head of the UPEL program at Lehigh University, and I'm going to let him tell you more about it because I don't want to get it all wrong. I want him to tell you about it a little bit later, but let me tell you what his journey has been. He has probably done everything that one can do to merge the arts, education, and leadership together. He went to St. John's University in New York City, which I have to ask, that means that maybe he's a native New Yorker. Then Brooklyn College is where he got his master's, and City College is where he's got the business administration. He has been the Philadelphia High School Leadership Project. He was the Allentown Principal Leadership, he created the Leadership Initiative. He was the Associate Director of the Summer Principals Academy at Columbia University. He's a group leader at the Harvard Principals Center. He's hosted radio shows for New York Public Radio. He is, like I said, he is UPAL, which I will say now is the Urban Principal Academy of Lehigh University. He's head of that. It's where I met him. And this is just a little highlight for the last umpteen decades in education, along with being starting off as an actor. And I'm sure he's going to probably correct me on some of this, but with all of that said, I'd like you to meet my new friend, John Drescher. Good evening, John. Oh, you know what? I've got to get him off of mute. That's my fault, my fault. Now, good evening, John.
Good evening, Lenny. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Good.
Ah,
Thanks for inviting me onto your show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's just my pleasure. As I have a pleasure all the time when we have rounds at Lehigh University, it's just absolutely phenomenal. You know, what I want to know is how close did I come to some of the things that you've done? Did I come a little close? I know that there's also something that I wanted to talk to. You were the principal of Performing Arts Junior High School in New York City. That's a lot of things that people don't know, and that's where your arts connection also happens. Did I come close to some of the things that you have done in all the years that you've been in education and leadership and art?
You captured a lot of it, sure.
Yeah. Now,
absolutely.
Tell me, are you a native New Yorker? Are you a native New Yorker?
Can't you tell from my accent? I'm from New York. So,
are you
yes.
from New York?
Yes, I'm from New York. Born and raised, went to school there, and spent a good portion of my life there. Yes.
Oh, and when did you tell me a little bit about? We'll talk about what you do now, of course, which is so fascinating. But how you got to that? Tell me a little bit about the early part of your life, John, and was education something that you loved as a child? Did you love to go to school? Were there educators in your family? Tell me a little bit about that, if you can, please.
Okay. No, I didn't like going to school, except for 1 year. Fifth grade, I had a wonderful teacher. His name was Mr. Greenhill, and it was a long time ago, but he seemed to really understand kids, and he was he ran a classroom that was absolutely wonderful. And when I eventually became an educator, and I wasn't an education major, I used him as a role model for the 10 years that I was a teacher in Brooklyn, and eventually decided that if I'm going to stay as an educator after a bachelor's in business and a master's in speech and theater and radio and television production, mm-hmm. that if I'm going to stay in mm-hmm. education, I'd like to do something about leadership, because I really felt mm-hmm. The leadership was severely lacking in the schools I worked in, and wanted to try to do something different that would be very collaborative and creative and visionary.
Did you know in middle school, in elementary school, you said you didn't love school. It wasn't until fifth grade that you had this wonderful teacher. Did that teacher then prompt you to think about higher education, or was that something that was going already determined in your family, that you were going to go up in higher education?
I think it was just assumed. Nobody in my immediate family had gone to college. I was the first one in my family mm-hmm. to go to college okay. and get a degree, and then another degree, and then another degree, I was trying to find myself, so that helped. And I was just telling some of my graduate students earlier today that, you know, to be brutally honest, when I was getting out of college, I really did not want to get drafted. I didn't want to. The Vietnam War was going on. And in New York City, you could get a deferment if you were mm-hmm. an urban educator. Mm-hmm. So I had a friend who was teaching in a school in Brooklyn, and at that point they were looking for some young teachers to come in. And I had an interview with the principal, and basically I had the feeling that if you could walk and chew gum at the same time, you'd get the job. And I was able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and got the job and spent 10 years trying to figure out what was the best thing to do, what was in the best interests of these students, many of whom I did not look like. So how do I engage them and learn what's important to them so that I could bring that into the classroom?
You know, and so at what point did these three things come together? You know, the point where you say you saw that there was a lacking in the education system, so there was something that needed to be done, but the importance of the art in it and how leadership became a component, did that just happen, you know, in a conversation one day? Did you, or over time, did it become apparent to you that these three components were really three components that you wanted to be involved in?
Well, I think it did. I think it evolved over time.
Uh-huh.
I spent quite a few of those early years looking for other things to do to make a living. But you know, it was kind of like the Godfather. I kept getting pulled back in, and eventually, I guess it was that's where I was supposed to be. And you know, one thing led to another. Well, I have a master's degree in speech and theater. I wouldn't consider myself much of an actor. Although being a good school leader, there's a lot of acting involved with that.
Yeah, performance does make a difference. Yeah. The experience that one has when one participates in the performance of something in the theater makes a difference between that and a person who is an observer. So I just say, I don't say that you made your living as an actor, but your experience as an actor, did it help you understand or appreciate the arts, I think, more than you think a lot of people do who are in education?
I think that's possible. I think also the experience of doing some theater, the arts in general, gave me more confidence about being up in front of groups of people and speaking publicly, very often spontaneously. Even when I did a public TV series back in the early 80s, I was much more comfortable just sort of running with the lines as I thought they should be, as opposed to using a teleprompter, which of course drove the director, crazy because he was never quite sure what was going to come out of my mouth. But it sets up a scenario, and I think one of the things that's lacking very often as we develop school leaders and other kinds of leaders is just the ability to get up in front of groups of people and speak from the heart, because there's nothing more boring than sitting down somewhere and having somebody pull out, you know, 10 sheets of prepared speech and have them read it to you. That's not usually very inspiring.
No, exactly. Well, you know, and I think that when you say that the theater experience helps you with confidence and spontaneity, I think it does do that for all of us. When we are in the theater, when we are outside of the theater, I think there's a confidence that we have when we walk in the room that I believe that theater does that for us, that the arts do that for us, music, the appreciation, dance, appreciation, visual arts, all of those things do that to give you a little bit more confidence. And the tie-in of it that I really am talking about tonight is the leadership part of it, because your program, and I want to talk about you, Pal, a little bit, your program is talking about how important leadership is, and I believe that those of us in the arts do have an obligation to realize that we are certain kinds of leaders at all times, that people look to us to kind of be an example for them. And so there is an obligation that we have. And to think that, well, I'm an actor and I didn't come in it for that, that has nothing to do with it. That's what happens. It does happen to most of us. People look to us as an example. And I really want to reiterate to emphasize that in our conversation tonight, because I think it's very important. Factors really are entangled, like in a tree. They're like, you know, limbs of a tree that just are entangled to one another. It's so important that we recognize that, and that's why I'm asking you when it happened for you, how you're putting it together. So I'm trying to build my little arc all the way getting to when I met you. So you are now out of school. You've been teaching 10 years. You found that there is a gap that you think that there's some need for something else. How did you start creating this new concept, let's put it like that, of leadership in the arts and education?
Basically, I was able to do it as a classroom teacher. There was so little leadership, active leadership going on in the school I worked in Brooklyn, that I could pretty much do whatever I wanted in my classroom. So I brought in theater, I brought in music, I brought in movement, I created, living human math problems where, you know, kids would have be different numbers and different symbols, and just getting them up. I started taking the students on trips, getting them into museums. What are you seeing? How does this make you feel? Very often in the arts, your perspective on something is your perspective on something, and somebody else's is just as valid. And put it together, and you may have a much clearer picture. I was very fortunate early on in the early 80s to go and work in East Harlem for a superintendent named Anthony Alvarado, who had created some wonderful thematic schools that students from all over New York City were trying to get into, as well as teachers. And again, he and some of the other leaders at that time in the early 80s were hiring people, had confidence in them, and didn't sit around trying to micromanage them, and gave them a lot of flexibility to let their vision shine through. And as a leader, if you're given that flexibility, and it's a whole lot easier to then give the same collaborative flexibility to the people who you work with on your staff. All right, well, what do you think? Somebody's not shoving stuff down my throat. I don't feel like in turn I have to shove anything down anybody else's throat. And so we'll work this out together.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I go too far, I want you to talk about, leadership and how that applies to, and we were talking off air, how that applies to organizations, because I have some thoughts that I'm dealing with now that I'd like to, get some transparency and clarification on from you. But I want you to talk about UPAL a little bit and how that came to being in Lehigh University.
Well, I was hired 12 years ago. This is my 12th year at Lehigh, and I was hired to be the lead faculty member, the lead professor in programs that we had federal grants for in Philadelphia and in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And worked with some wonderful people, a man by the name of George White, actually is the one who brought me to Lehigh. And he liked my ideas and just said, go with them. So I started bringing the concept of the art of observation and using works of art into these classes, working with jazz musicians about leading and following, working with tango dancers and musicians, bringing in improvisational theater technique into the programs, and just started taking that idea and deciding, Why limit this to just Philadelphia or people from Allentown? Why don't I see if Lehigh will let me start a brand new master's degree program, which we eventually named the Urban Principles Academy at Lehigh, which is now going into its 10th year, and bring all of these aspects along with some good research, some good academic research about leadership, and bring it all together and see what happens in terms of what type of leader will develop through this. Because to me, leadership, not just in education, leadership is primarily about a state of mind. And within that state of mind, whether there's trust or creativity or presence or empathy, and if we can help create this state of mind in these emerging leaders, they're going to be much better prepared to go out and become effective leaders, because like most things in life, you really learn the majority of what it is you're doing when you're doing it, when you're on the job, not when you're just learning about it. So if we had So I think we've prepared them quite well, and we have our graduates who are leading schools all over the country.
So you have the students that you're doing now are usually teachers who have experience in education?
Most of them are teachers. Some of them already have some quasi-leadership roles already. And most of them work in district schools. Some of them work in charter schools. And occasionally we have some people who work in private schools or independent schools.
But
it's wonderful. This way they can learn from each other as well. And they do everything
exactly.
In teams.
They're all over they're from all over the country. Which is,
right. And all the work that they do in creative teams. They don't write research papers, because writing research papers has nothing to do with becoming a great school leader. I was a school leader for 25 years. You don't write research papers on the job. If you learn how to work collaboratively and creatively, that's a wonderful start to your career.
Yeah. Well, I think that. I think that applies to a couple of things in the arts. I think writing about the performance of it doesn't take the place of actually doing it, because there's just really nothing that can replicate getting out there and experiencing live performance in front of an audience in front of a camera and how you can say yourself. Now, I you said something now about leadership, and we were talking off camera, and I was telling you that I have a bit of a dilemma, and I'd like you and anyone who's listening now to come in and tell me, you know, what you think about my dilemma. What do you think leadership really means? What does leadership mean to you, John? What does it mean?
It means understanding people. It means being a good listener. It means knowing how to make people feel that right now what they're telling you is the most important thing in your day, because it probably is to them. Understanding who people are and how to engage with them. There's just so many different aspects of leadership. Also, a great leader is also knowing when to step back and let other people lead, and know how to follow yourself. Like, that's why we use jazz as a metaphor.
Explain that a little bit more.
If you go and watch a great jazz ensemble play, there's usually a front person, put this group together, you know, Miles Davis or Stan Getz or whoever it might be. They're not always the person out front. They understand how to also be part of an ensemble, and they know how to let other people from the ensemble step forward, and they know how to support them. Everyone has a chance to have their solo and improvise, somehow or other, with great jazz groups, they pick up verbal and nonverbal cues from each other. There's a lot of trust that seems to go on between the musicians. And that's why I think using jazz as a metaphor for leadership is a very powerful one. And not just talking about it, but actually going and watching performances and then interacting
and
with the musicians.
Yeah. I think it also promotes collaboration. You know, I think that one of the things that I enjoy about the things that I do, whether it's in front of the camera or in front of the lights or down and directing someone, is that the process is one of collaboration, that there is no one way of looking at it, that we'd be flexible in our thought process. And one of the things that we were talking about earlier is that I'm in a bit of a dilemma now, and what I've come to be a part of something where I believe that there's a restriction placed upon people in this organization that I'm thinking about staying with, about what one can talk about. And I think because I have such a strong background in the arts, I find that very disturbing and troublesome to me. I've been a part of boards for the last 10, 15 years, and this is the first time that I've ever been approached by being told what I can and cannot talk about. And I think that my rebellion comes from the fact that I belong to an industry that promotes collaboration and freedom and flexibility. And all of a sudden, I'm put in a position where one group of people has decided that that doesn't happen in their circle. And you said to me something very interesting. You said, well, you have a decision to make. Well, what did you say? Well,
why do you want to be on that board?
And I want to, there's a couple of things. I want, discovering that that's on the board and discovering that it disturbs me, I want to find out if it disturbs the rest of the membership that way. And therefore, maybe this board needs a little adjustment to happen. And I'm not one who suffers silently. So if I'm off the mark, then that's fine. But I don't think that way of solving problems is to censor people and to tell them they can't talk about it.
Well, Lenny, there's a difference between being on a board, and there's a difference between being board in and of itself and leadership. Most organizations that have a board also have leaders that the board has probably hired. And my experience very often has been that boards don't know how to be boards. They don't know the difference between governance and management, let's say. And very often they start going where they don't belong when it comes to a particular organization. Not always, but very often. And I know certainly in education, when I was a superintendent, which is always kind of an interesting situation. One of the roles of the school superintendent is to manage the school board, which is interesting because that board hires you and that board can dismiss you. But you're also supposed to keep them on task and help set the agenda. And a good board should be open to comments and questions. A good board should have committees so that, you know, very often you go to, I don't know about some of the boards you've been on, but, you know, some board meetings go on for 3-4 hours. That's absurd. a good board meeting should never be that long. And yeah. because they start wandering all over the place. They don't have, they're not following
you
an agenda.
To.
And, yeah. you know, yeah. they,
mm-hmm.
and
but
so
the agenda,
it makes things very difficult.
Yeah, I just think that the agenda, I agree with that totally. I totally agree with that there needs to be a time limit as to how people talk about things, but I don't agree that there should be a restriction on what you can talk about. Now, so that's why I asked your guidance. Is there any under any circumstances do you think that there should be restrictions about what you can talk about?
I think there
and
are times
that
boards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very very often boards need to have what's called an executive session, where they might be talking
mm-hmm.
about a personnel issue. They might even be talking about
mm-hmm.
the leader of the organization. And that you don't want to do with other people in the room, including the leader. So there's a time and a place, but I think it's up to a board and its bylaws and to decide where are we going, how are we going to get there, what are the action steps we're going to take, who's going to be involved in doing these things, and if somebody has a question. A good board meeting should always have time for questions. And if you don't have an
okay.
answer, then we'll say, you know what? Well, we don't know the answer to that right now, so someone's going to do some research, and we'll discuss that at the next meeting.
Yeah. I guess that's where I am. I just think that you should always be able to ask a question. I do respect the fact that some people in any meeting like to hear their voices. They just like to hear themselves talk. So you do have to be, you know, particular about timing and tell people to be succinct and all those kinds of things. But when you start, I believe, telling people what they can and cannot think about and censoring them, I have issue with that. And so that's something, and I will take up in your conversation, as you said to me, well, Lenny, you have to decide whether or not you need to be here. You know, maybe it's just not, it's not the place for me. Maybe it's not, you know. It wouldn't be the first
or confront, I mean, you know, at a board meeting or speak to the board chair and say, why can't I, what's wrong with my bringing up these subjects? Oh, we
yeah.
don't want to go there.
Well,
you know what? If the answer is we don't want to go there, you know, with some of my graduate students, they're talking about looking as they look for leadership jobs and the warning signs that can take
mm-hmm.
place during a job interview, because a good job interview isn't just a school or an organization interviewing you. You're interviewing them as well.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
what are the,
exactly.
you know, what are the red flags that are going up? What are the danger signals? And if you're getting them, they're probably real. It's just like in relationships
mm-hmm.
and, oh, it'll be better, you know, when we're married or we're living together. Well, you know, how often does that work out?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Danger signals are danger signals. And if I'm, you know, if something is, this is not for me, it's not for you. It's a shame that other people
yeah.
aren't willing to speak up, but a lot of people aren't. And a lot of people have their own reasons for wanting to be on boards. And sometimes they just don't want to make waves, because they want to stay on that board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think a good board should be controversial at times.
Yeah.
And open
yeah,
themselves
I mean,
up.
You know, controversy is not combativeness. It's not combativeness.
Right.
And you know, I mean,
yeah.
and I think that I think good leadership is one where, for me, good leadership, in my experience in the arts, it brings about a collaboration in that I don't ever think when I'm leading something that I'm the only person who has an opinion about it. I like to be able to open it up. And also the development of everybody else in there is that I am developing not people to follow, but developing leaders so that you know when to sit back and let that meeting can go on and you can see what impressions the patterns that you have shown people, you can see it in other people as they go on and utilize those patterns. And
oh,
so I'm just
No, I agree with what you're saying. When I first became a school leader, as a matter of fact, my first year at Performing Arts, I had a sign that someone gave me on my desk which said, "Because I said so." By the end of the first year, I threw that in the garbage because I realized that is not the kind of organizational climate I want. It's not just because I said so. It's I also need to know, what do you think?
Exactly. It's a bigger picture. It's more than just one particular thing. And people are not monolithic. No one has to everybody doesn't think the same, no matter if you are in the same religion, the same race. People are not monolithic. So they should have an opportunity to say something, you know, differently without being attacked or combated by it. And that's disturbing for me if that is happening. And, you know, again, as much as I enjoy the activities of this organization, and I do, and the relationships that I have outside of this unit, I can't enjoy it knowing that the leadership of it, when I leave it, when I leave that leadership circle, is still functioning like that. That to me is difficult. And so that's where my turmoil comes in, you know. I can't suffer.
We have to pick and choose our battles. By the way, you had mentioned Nova Tolliver when we first started. And I hope Nova's listening because I want to say hello to her, and I want to thank her for introducing us and for suggesting that you come to Rounds. So hi, Melba, if you're listening, because Melba's wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. She is, and has always been for me a source of pride and the principles that she's kept all these years. And
she certainly
and
doesn't
just,
keep her she doesn't keep her opinions to herself.
No.
That's for sure. Right, Melba?
This is not something probably the signs would have come very early for her, and she would have just turned around and went about face. And and I understand, you know, I do understand that is something that she would do. But this is, you know, it just comes very timely, this conversation, because I literally like 3 days I've been confronted with this, and it's just not anything that if this was the first part of the organization that I had seen, I probably, I have to say honestly, would not have joined at all because it doesn't appeal to me. I have to be very honest about that.
Just a quick story. One of the schools where I was a principal in Westchester County in suburban outside of New York City, I left there. I was there from 1993 until 2000. And I really think the school came alive during those years, and we used the arts extensively. And unfortunately, one of the teachers from that era, who was even there before I was there, recently passed away. And so I went to a memorial service for him. And there must have been 250 people online waiting to go up and talk to his family and to his wife. And when I had never met his wife before. And when I got up to her, I said, "Hi, I'm John Drescher." And even before I continued about who I was, she said, "Oh, he loved you." I said, "Well, I loved him too." She said, "He was so happy during those years." And I said, "We all were." And because we collaborated, it was very child-centered. And while I was waiting in line, there was about 10 people behind me. There was a woman who I think had been on the school board then, and she had been on the school board for a very long time. And she made life very difficult, you know, was very antagonistic towards the creative approaches that we started bringing in. And I was thinking to myself, lady, why did you have to make life so difficult? Because it was different, it was new, it meant change. You know, change is important, change is gonna happen. Unfortunately, not everybody likes change.
No. But it is how you make the change. It's the methodology, I think, that, you know, I think bullying does not make change, happen in a positive way.
I think diplomacy in change is important again. If it's collaborative.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra?
Yes.
Okay. Orpheus is housed in the Riverside Church in Manhattan. And
Church.
A number of
mm-hmm.
years ago, they are one of the few major orchestras that do not have a conductor. And I thought this is a great example of collaboration, of people working together. And every time they are rehearsing another number to perform, whether it's at Carnegie Hall or somewhere in the world, one member of the orchestra sort of becomes the point person. And I was able to work with them a number of years ago about observations and the importance of getting off, in this case, the stage and getting a different perspective. Because what they do during rehearsals, a couple of members of the orchestra leave the stage and they go sit in different parts of the theater or the auditorium so they can hear and see things that you wouldn't hear and see if you were in the midst of the rest of the orchestra on the stage. And then they come back and they say, I think we should do this. I think we should do that. This doesn't sound quite right. And you think about it, and it's literally getting up into the balcony and seeing things from a
wow.
whole different angle, a whole different perspective. And a lot of
wow.
those musicians said they could go and work for the, you know, New York Philharmonic and the Boston Symphony and make more money, but they wouldn't get this freedom. They wouldn't have this collaboration.
Ah.
And that is so important.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Well, believe it or not, we only have about 15 more minutes left. I told you this would go, and I'd get you thinking, you know, those of you who are listening, my dear John was not feeling at his tip-top best, but, of course, the professional that he was decided. She said, no, we have to do this. We won't do the video this evening. You know, I want to say to everyone that that won't happen. I probably will tape something and explain to everyone why it's not happening. But his concern was, you know, I don't know if I can last. Well, now is the time, if anyone has any questions, this is the time. This is the last part of it. So you've lasted absolutely beautifully. So congratulations to you, John.
Well, thank you. You've been very inspiring yourself, so
I'm
glad I'm here.
You know, it's just, I am so glad that you're doing it. And also, I'm hoping that there are several people who have who are on the list here, and I'm hoping that they have some questions that they might want to ask before our time is up. But if they don't, I can tell you how invaluable just knowing that the conversation is being had in educational circles about leadership and the arts and meshing the three, merging the three of them together, and how important that is. Because so many times the arts, and I really do believe this, and I say it all the time, the arts are not given credit for what it is that it has contributed to our lives. Like you just said, you know, it gives you so much confidence. And the example of that orchestra, so that you could actually exist in a grouping and not have a designated leader where one must always look to that leadership has rotated. It means that you have an orchestra full of leaders. Everyone is a leader there, and that's the real big picture, and that's what we are really all hoping to do is to enhance people to become leaders and not wait for someone to give them a thought, but to initiate thought, and that's what the rounds do. I invite people, if they have an opportunity to, I'm inviting them to your rounds.
oh no, please do, because the more,
you know,
the merrier.
I think it's absolutely fabulous. If people who are listening want to reach out to me, and when I get the information, do you have the information for the next one?
I think it's going to be March 19th. if that's a Saturday. Started around 11 years ago, once a month on a Saturday morning, which is not the best time for most people, but we've tried weekdays, and that's even worse. We just get together. Bunch of people get together purely voluntarily, except for some of the current students, kind of twist their arm to be there. And we talk about social issues. For the most part, for the last 4 or 5 years, those issues have centered around issues of racism, privilege, inequity in our society, and how they impact education. But, you know, almost anything in our lives now, it's going to manifest itself in our schools. So let's talk about it openly. And it's Socratic,
which means
everybody has a chance. Everyone, there are no wrong answers, and anybody can really say what they want to say as long as you're a professional about it and polite.
It is Saturday, the 19th. It starts at 10 a.m. usually?
It starts at 10 a.m. because we've been doing them virtually now for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So we go from 10 at Eastern time until about 11:45. And, the last one we did was last month, and we showed the wonderful film Summer of Soul at the Harlem Cultural Festival from 1969. And sometimes we'll watch a movie, sometimes we'll talk about articles, sometimes people will just talk about experiences in their lives. And that's how I met Melba. She showed up when we were still doing them in person. And, just bring your perspective and be willing to share it.
I want to say to everyone that it's a very safe place. Sometimes you go into places and you wonder if, you know, how am I going to be received? Are people going to judge me? Are people going to have an opinion about what it is? But it's a very safe place, I found, that you can, I think, in a very diplomatic way, talk about what you think the subject is, how it affects you, and respectfully, and people do receive it, and they do think about it. Because it's so many people from different parts of life. But there are people who have not had an exposure to a lot of things. For those of us who are of a certain culture, it does enhance it that we're there to talk about experiences that people have not had. So I really do enjoy that. And it's that safeness that has spoiled me when I go to other places where it's not there. So I will say to you all to reach out to me if you have to reach out on an email or on Facebook or something, and I will post the date and the link and the time of the round so that you can come in and be a guest and introduce yourself and talk about how you heard about it and become part of the conversation. Would that be all right, John?
Oh, absolutely. And you'll be sitting there with literally people from all over the world. Because we have
all
people from Panama who join us. We have people from Israel who join us. People from different parts
in
of the United States.
In the different time zones, yes.
We have high school students, and we have, we've had grandparents. So everyone has their perspective and their experiences, and how wonderful to be able to share them.
Yes, I agree. I absolutely agree. It's a wonderful experience, and I am the kind of person. I was the student who loved to go to school. I was the one, my birthday is in September, so it was, get the new clothes and get dressed up, and then we go to school and wonder who's going to be in my class now, and I wanted to be a teacher. We know that things did not quite turn out that way. They took another path, but I still love, and all my friends are teachers. I still love that profession and honor it so much. And no matter what subject it is, whether it is in the subject of just the, you know, the math, the science, the engineering and all of that, or if it's in the arts, it's either STEM or STEAM, then I really admire it. And I do know how difficult a job it is. So I admire all of you who do it so very well.
Well, you know, Lynn, it's interesting because great educators incorporated the arts into science and technology and math even before somebody came up with the acronyms of STEAM or STEM. And
right.
It doesn't make a difference what you call it. What's important is that you do it and that if I was starting a school from scratch now, I would want everything to center around the arts. But everything, there isn't anything you can't teach through the arts.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I absolutely agree.
And too many schools too many schools just treat them like add-ons. You know, it's a soft subject. No, it's a critical subject. They're critical subjects.
Absolutely.
And it's
critical
and
in the
universal.
Development of the people.
It's universal.
Absolutely.
If you have students who are limited with English, they can certainly draw. They can certainly listen to music. They can certainly move. They can do all kinds of things with the arts.
I agree. It is so imperative and impactful to the development, the complete development, I believe, of young people. I believe that the arts leads on to all those other things, but I do believe that if you are an artist, you need to have all those other things too, that just the arts is not enough, that we really must incorporate all the other, the English, the math, the science, so that we're well-rounded human beings. But to give arts its good, to give it credit, because it really is so very important. To think about a discussion of a school that started its day with that. It's so soothing in an atmosphere, in a time now where we're always so tense and so stressed out because we don't know where we are. You know, we don't know if we are to the point where we can go places as freely as we did before. And everyone has their own opinion about it and should, you know, and no one should force anybody else's opinion on anyone else. As long as we practice and let everybody be in their own sphere about how they want to be, I think we're in a good place. And I think that the education system, leadership, and the arts does promote that. It gives you that ability to think wider. And, in the last few minutes, John, is there anything that you want to say to the audience that's listening? I'm so very surprised that no one has asked you a question, because I know some of the numbers that are here, and these are people who are in education, but they, I think, are just listening to what it is that you have to say, and will probably ask me for the link for the rounds in March to hear more of how you conduct the rounds at Lehigh University. I'm very surprised that we don't have anybody. But we're down to almost the last 3 minutes. So is there anything else that you like to talk about in education, in UPEL, or anything else like that before we sign off?
Was just going to say that if anyone is an educator who's listening or knows someone who's an educator and they're thinking about getting an advanced degree, a master's degree, UPAL is a very exciting place to get it. It's the entire program is done in 13 months. Most of the work is done in 2 summers. And while it's intense, we're also spending time, like I said before, with jazz musicians at Jazz and Lincoln Center and doing art of observation at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and having some wonderful improv classes and seminars on racism. And, you'll be meeting people from all over the country who are interested in becoming transformative school leaders. So if anyone knows anybody, they can contact you and you could put them in touch with me because our next cohort is going to start the end of June.
Yes, and I shall do that. And I'm very, very honored to be an integral part of all of that.
Sure.
Look forward to it. I look forward to introducing people to this process. If they don't make it all the way to the class, the rounds is a wonderful thing for them to do. But if they make it all the way, that's fabulous. And just opening it up the arts opportunities. And I think the component of education, the arts, and leadership is invaluable. I always think that higher education is wonderful, but the way that you weave them together now is something that really has interested me, and I can't thank you enough. I really, really can't thank you enough. And
well, thank you, Lenny. I enjoyed this.
Yeah. I'm hoping, that we will get a chance later on at another point in time in a different medium maybe, or maybe the same one, to have similar conversations. And we will do that and explore all of the things. And I won't be in dilemmas. Of course I will. I'm always in dilemmas. What am I talking about? I'm always getting involved in something, and I'm, people who know me go, oh, here's Lenny. What is she into now? What is she doing now? So get used to that, John. That's what my MO is. So
well,
I look forward
I can relate. I think people who are creative and who like to inquire, get into it sometimes. And there are dilemmas and, how do we handle this type of situations? We're not sitting around twiddling our thumbs.
No,
we're actively engaged in life.
Yeah, I may not stay around, but I think I just need to make it known what my thoughts are, and then I can I can't let it go and not do something, because the picture is bigger than me. It's a bigger picture, and I've come to realize that in my life, and I'm very blessed to know that. And with that, I will say to everyone that next week we have Tony winner Chuck Cooper and his spouse, Deborah Rivort. I will say it right by next week. She is so creative. I hope that you will get a chance to come in and listen to their conversation about how the arts has really affected their lives thus far, and how they make it work in their relationship. I'm very excited to have that. And I thank you, John, for joining us this evening. And with that, I'm going to thank everyone for listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser, again at blogtalkradio.com. There she's back. /S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. See you all on the radio, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye now.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do.